Okay, at this point we'll move to our speaker, and welcome to the EBA Monthly Risk Management Call. Today is Wednesday, June 19th, 2019. I'm Dennis Firestone, and Michael Cole and I are your hosts today. In the presentation portion, the call is recorded in lieu of minutes, and the call is intended for EBA members, invited guests only, and the EBA makes no representations or warranties the accuracy and suitability of the information provided in the webinars and related materials such as handouts, presentation documents, recordings, and the information contained in the webinars and related materials are not intended to constitute advice of any kind or the rendering of consulting or professional services, and opinions expressed in the webinar are those of the authors and speakers only and may not represent the views of the EBA. Scott, that probably makes you really nervous. All right. Scott, sound check.
All right. This is Scott Deathridge. Can you hear me?
Absolutely. And just as a reminder to everybody, you should have the PowerPoint deck. Scott's going to run through that, and as he goes, he'll call off the slide numbers. And if for some reason you don't have the deck, you lost the agenda or whatever, send me a note. And, of course, if you do nothing today, click on Scott's V-card and get him into your Outlook box, your contacts box. Scott, we've known you for, probably 15 years.
Long time, 15 or more probably.
And you've been
I've got the gray hair to prove it.
You've covered some tough topics for us over the years. We've come to you on some topics where we didn't have an attorney that really knew the content, and this is a great example. I think for those that have joined the call today and they have been on for a while, was back in August, we did roof equipment. It was a great presentation. I think that was Nova, and then we had last month Dustin Smoot. Dustin, are you still on? Are you on? I think you're on the call. Dustin, shout out. Terracon, Amy, you're on, right? Amy Jacobs, you should be there.
I'm here.
All right. So we had their presentation last month talking about roof types, and it was just a logical evolution that we would get to this point because, frankly, I didn't know where else to go, and Scott delivered because we're seeing so much regarding solar and tax credits. We just wanted somebody to bring this topic to a close and just nail it. And for those lenders on the phone, intelligent questions you might ask your borrower, or if you see the deal for the consultant, emerging market, you better, I recommend you reach out to Scott, because if you have clients, I have to attest, I've known Scott for years, he's going to keep you in the deal. So if you have an opportunity after Scott speaks here, call him up, put the deal in for him, he'll help you qualify it, help you develop it, and maybe you guys can do business together. That's what part of the EBA is about, is networking and doing business together. So with that being said, Scott, tell us a little bit about yourself and take us through the deck. And just as a reminder, please call off your slide numbers as you go.
Okay, well, just to start with the second slide, I'm a practice in the environmental energy space for about 32 years. In the environmental space, done a lot of work with lenders, private equity, brownfield, real estate, banking transactions, investment transactions. On the energy side, I've done a lot in the wind and solar space. I've also done natural gas power, both at the with renewables and solar in particular. I've worked on about 40 or 50 utility scale leases, but also worked on leases and power purchase agreements, other documents of advice related to commercial and industrial buildings. So without spending any more time on that, let's just go ahead and jump to slide three. Similar disclaimer, this is not legal advice. This is only an overview. Don't do this by yourself. Get legal and accounting advice and tax advice before launching into this on your own. But with all those preliminary discussions, what I want to talk about today in a sort of summary way is what opportunities exist for applying tax credits to a solar roof system. And why am I using the term solar roof system? As we'll talk about in a minute, the idea behind applying tax credits to a solar and roof project roofing project is that the IRS has given us some interpretations through some private letter rulings and other indications that a roof can act as both, you know, a traditional roof or a structural part of the building, but it can also act as part of the solar system. And that's one of the key things we'll talk about as we go along. But the four or five things I want to talk about, and I'll just we'll go over these, but just so I wanted to introduce you to them initially, and that is, first of all, what are solar tax credits? How do they arise? What do they apply to? How long can you get these things? And then the next item would be, how might these solar tax credits apply to your commercial industrial roof systems? What are the potential limitations? And that's one of the key things that I'll talk about in general, but the devil's in the details. I'll mention some alternative financing that could be used with tax benefits. And then finally, I'll mention some other tax benefits that may apply depending on the location of the building. So I hope when you walk away with this, you'll have a general understanding. And then if you have any questions, you know, give me a call and we can see if we can help you with specific situations. So what are solar tax credits? For some time, Congress at the federal level has allowed what's called a solar investment tax credit. And so what is that? Well, what it means is the credit applies to the capital investment for the solar system, whether it be a solar farm, you know, 50, 100, 200 megawatts out in the country, in California, out in the desert, and some of the other states out in the desert. So if you build a $100 million solar farm, then there are $30 million in tax credits that can be applied to that solar farm. Now, bringing it back to the smaller scale for commercial industrial buildings, slide number 5, if you're on that, give you a very general discussion of how it might work. Let's say you invested $1 million in an eligible U.S. solar project. And let's say you did that in 2019. In 2020, when you file your 2019 tax return, assuming you have the tax liability to cover it, then you could deduct $300,000 from what you owe on your taxes. So, say for example, you owed $500,000. Since it's a credit, it's a direct reduction in the tax owed. The other benefit is there is what we call 100% bonus depreciation, meaning your investment can rather than being depreciated over 5 or 10 years, in 2020 on your 2019 tax return, you could depreciate 100% of what you incurred in terms of capital costs in 2019 on the solar project. So the tax basis is adjusted when you have a credit, and normally that would be the $300,000 would be subtracted from $1 million, so you'd have $700,000 basis for depreciation. But with respect to solar projects, they actually allow you to use 15% or half of the credit, so it's 85% of the total cost, which is, you know, roughly $850,000. This is a corporate tax rate of 21%. That's roughly $178,500 in tax benefit. And if you add those up on your 2019 tax return, you could get a $478,500 tax benefit, roughly, assuming I did my math correctly. And this is generally a description of a C-Corp approach. With individuals, there are some issues, passive activity loss, and at-risk rules. That one project I worked on a couple of years ago with some solar projects out in California, an individual was trying to take wanted to try to use some funds from selling the company and ran into some of these issues. And so it's a lot easier to do it as a corporation versus an individual, just a little more complicated, and there's some limitations for individuals. So that's just a general description of the mechanics of the solar tax credit. Now, one of the things you have to keep in mind is typically the credits for renewable projects are set to phase out, whether it's wind or solar. A few years ago, there was a compromise between the oil and gas industry and the renewable people and their respective politicians that Congress would allow the export of oil from the United States, which was previously restricted. And the solar guys said, well, solar and wind guys said, well, give us another 5 or so years of full tax breaks. And so the solar ITC was extended, but it starts to phase down starting at the end of this year, the beginning of next year. So the ITC for 2019 for projects that have begun in 2019, and if you can show continued work on those projects, then you can get a 30% tax credit in 2020. That reduces to 26%. For projects started in 2021, it's 22%. And then 2022, it drops to 10% and continues at 10%, which is still a good credit, but not as good as in 2019. Now, it's possible that these tax credits will be extended by Congress, and if the president would sign such a bill, a tax bill, then it would extend these. But this is the current view for solar farms and commercial industrial buildings. The residential home tax benefit actually phases out to zero. The other thing I would mention is the 100% bonus depreciation phases out at the end of 2022. So the really hefty tax benefits for solar and solar roof systems does begin to phase out. So there's a couple more years to go to get these benefits. If you'll jump over to slide 7, how would this apply to commercial industrial roof systems? The 30% investment tax credit could apply to all or a portion of the cost of a solar roofing system, and I'll explain how that works in a minute. The 100% bonus depreciation of the cost of the roof applies in the first year. I think it's also important to realize that there are some state renewable energy incentives that could apply to the solar project itself. And so I'm really focusing on the federal tax credits and benefits, but there may be other grants, tax credits, or depreciation you could apply for states. For example, in Texas, a solar project put in on a property that's used on site, there's an exemption, 100% exemption from property taxes. And so that, you know, sometimes people forget about the property tax cost. And several other states also have that benefit. So that's another thing to, when you're doing your complete analysis and financial modeling of a project like this, you do have to take into account state and local property tax, sales tax, other potential taxes, and where you can get relief from those. One thing I'll note before we jump into the next slide is the actual amount of the roof and solar system you can deduct may not actually hit 100%, but as we'll talk about in the next couple of slides, it's still a very hefty potential tax benefit to the building owner. All right, well, let's go to slide 8. Under the tax code, there are tax benefits for equipment that uses solar energy to generate electricity. It includes storage devices, power conditioning, transfer equipment, parts related to those items. Now, there is a reference that certain purely structural components of a building in some cases don't qualify. And so as we talk about this, there's a tax benefit, tax credit for the solar system and anything that's part of that system. But if it's purely part of the building, obviously that's not going to qualify for the tax credit, because the tax credit is directed at a solar generation system. So that's key to keep in mind. Okay, if you roll on over to slide number 9, the thing about the roof is the roof can either act as part of the solar system, it can act as a structural component of the building, or in most cases it's going to be a little bit of both. The IRS indicated in one of their forms that, as you'll see in the quote here, that no costs related to solar panel or other property installed as a roof or portion thereof will fail to qualify solely because the property constitutes a structural component. So I think what the IRS is saying is, and is stated in some other documents they've issued, is the roof can serve dual purposes, and that's going to be key. In the next slide 10, and I may not have corrected a spelling error. It says dual, D-U-A-L, not dual as in dueling banjos or dueling cowboys with six guns. So I apologize if that didn't make it into that correction, didn't make it in the slides you're looking at. So it's really, that's the potential, one of the potential limitations is, you know, what purpose is the roof serving? So a couple of things. The roof can act as a reflecting point. So let's say you had a black roof and you put in a white roof, a reflective roof. There are certain panels that are called bifacial panels, which is kind of the next thing in solar panels. Traditionally, solar panels had a backing, and so electricity was, you know, light wasn't hitting the back of the panel and generating electricity, and they've discovered that if they take that backing off, that some of the reflection of light that hits the back of the panel can actually increase the amount of electricity generated from the same size, same panel. And so if you have a white roof that's very reflective and you have bifacial panels, you're going to increase the amount of electricity generated from those panels. And so the white roof, in a private letter ruling to one potential taxpayer, said, you know, that can be considered part of the solar system. Another aspect that may qualify part of the roof as part of the solar project is that it can provide some of the structural aspects. A lot of solar projects sometimes, there will just be metal framing for the solar panels, and to hold that down so they don't blow off the roof, they'll use concrete blocks and other weight to just hold it down, where there's some companies that have made some structural connections to the actual roofing membrane, and so the solar panels and the framing is actually connected to the roof, and then that roof moves as there's wind or other motion. And so the roof actually becomes, in part of the structure of the solar system to hold it in place and hold it down. So typically what will happen is that the owner is going to have to apportion the cost between each aspect of the roof. For example, some parties will estimate the cost of a basic roof. If I was just going to put a basic roof on the building, and then they deduct that from the cost of the roof they're actually putting in as added to the solar panel installation. So they'll deduct the basic roof cost from the overall cost. And then oftentimes they'll use the remainder to apply the solar investment tax credit. This analysis requires legal and accounting advice, but has been used as a means of addressing the potentially dual purpose of the roof. So if you go over to slide 11, this is a very rough calculation. It assumes, if you look at the top here, Solar and roof system in total is, say, $3 million. A basic roof system is $300,000. We'll say roughly $2.7 million is the cost that you could apply the investment tax credit and the makers, which is just the depreciation of the project. So the ITC would be roughly $810,000. The basis after the ITC benefit would be $405,000. So roughly you end up with a rough the 100% bonus depreciation would be $481,950, and the rough tax benefit would be about $1.291 or $1.3 million. So a hefty tax, potential tax benefit. So that's the basic review of the tax benefits, how they might apply, how you might deal with the dual benefit of the roof. I did want to mention a couple of other things that you may find valuable, and that is there are alternative financing for these sorts of projects. If the building owner didn't want to pay cash for the roof and the solar system, or if they didn't have the tax appetite, you can transfer the tax benefit to a third party through some leases and other financial structuring. So sometimes the roof and the lease will act in the solar panels, the system will actually be leased to the building owner. Some of you may be familiar with property assessed clean energy financing. This is a type of financing that exists in Texas, California, Connecticut, New York, and in several other states, where the financing of energy efficiency, power generation, renewable generation for existing buildings is done through a process whereby the payback of a loan is through the property tax system. It's not a property tax, but it's collected by in a way that the county or city allows a third party, or they do it themselves. They collect it through your property tax payments or a similar system. And because that's a very safe way of ensuring the building owner, whether it's the current owner or that owner sells it, it's a fairly safe way of making sure that loan gets paid back. Oftentimes, the improvements to the building are financed at 100%. It also allows for a longer amortization, a longer period to pay back those sorts of loans, because some of the equipment, whether it's solar panels that have a 20 or 30 life, or heat and air conditioning systems that have a long life, you apply a pro rata equation that takes the cost and the lifespan of different improvements, say windows, lighting, solar, the roof, the heating and air conditioning system, and you apply that and you get, 18 to 20 year amortizations, which reduces the payments. And I'm going to walk through that in one of the next slides, how that might look with the solar tax benefits. Another approach often is a power purchase agreement will be used, where a third-party financing party or a developer finances the system, and then the building owner or their tenants or both pay for the electricity, and a third party will take the tax benefit, a tax equity investor, and the building owner and or the tenants just pay for the electricity. Now, one of the things we've seen is that building owners may try to include that additional electricity payment to tenants by increasing the actual lease payment, which can increase the return on the building and can increase the value of the building by increasing the cap rate. So those are some things to keep in mind if you're modeling the opportunities for a building owner. One of the things I think that's important to note is some building owners don't pay taxes, nonprofits, government-owned buildings, and so there are structuring approaches that can be used so that the tax benefits go to a third party that's financing the project in whole or in part, and the owner of the building, the nonprofit or government entity, gets part of the benefit of that by a reduced power price, because otherwise the power generated from the on-site solar system is going to cost them more because they can't use the tax benefit. So a lot of times that will be a power purchase agreement. Do keep in mind that if PACE lending is being utilized to finance some of the project, government buildings are typically not don't qualify for PACE lending. So let's look at the economics a little bit. Same $3 million investment in the roof and the solar system. If you could finance all of that through PACE, which, you know, let's just assume that you could. You may not. Maybe it's some portion of the $3 million cost. But the tax benefit is still the $1.3 million, but there's no money out of pocket for that improvement in the beginning. Obviously, you've got to pay back the loan. So in the first year, you'll have to make certain loan payments, but there's no equity, if you will, that would have to be put into the improvement. And then finally, I just want to mention there are other potential tax benefits that might apply depending on the location of the building. In 2017, as part of that tax bill, there were what were called Opportunity Zone tax benefits were created. These Opportunity Zones are typically lower income areas designated by the governor and then approved by the president or the administration. There are ways to defer capital gains if an investment is made in a business within an opportunity zone. There's a 10% savings if it's held for 5 years, another 5% if it's held for another 2 years for a total of 7. And then investments in opportunity zones that are held for 10 years, there would be no capital gains paid on the investment in properties within an opportunity zone if that investment's held for 10 years. So there's some other tax benefits that may apply. Jumping over to slide 16, this is just a phase-out period, how the opportunity zone tax benefits operate. So if you were to make an investment in 2019, you could save certain money on capital gains. You'd otherwise pay, and then if you held your investment until 2029 and sold it thereafter, there would be no taxes on the capital gains. So that's a quick and dirty analysis of potential tax benefits to solar installations on rooftops. And Dennis, I will throw it back to you, and I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Great job. I learned something today. It's a great job. So the lines are open. Anybody have any questions? And then I did not warn you, Scott, some of the lenders, they won't step forward, you know, and state what firm they're what bank they're with. So you'll probably
That's fine.
Questions by email, as I'm looking at a couple of comments that just came in here.
Hey, okay. Scott, what is the I'm sorry. I was just going to ask a real quick question. Scott, what is the process like? How long does it take do you have to get an approval, or do you just automatically qualify if you meet certain criteria? And
well, sure, go ahead. Well, it's like any other tax deduction or credit you may take on your tax return. You know, you're going to have to calculate, you have to look at or get your lawyer and accountant to look at what you're doing. And so you'd file your return, and then, you know, if for some reason the IRS were to audit your taxes, you know, they'd come in and ask you questions about, you know, how did you calculate the cost of the roof? What was the cost of the solar project? Do you have documentation? But normally this you don't apply to the IRS to get approval, you know, as in anything else, it's a voluntary system, and you know, you're supposed to do your best to calculate what the appropriate tax benefits are and then file your tax return accordingly.
Sure.
Any other questions? All right. Great job, Scott. This is wonderful. And for those that are just in listen mode, please make sure you download Scott's fee card, save it to your Outlook, and reach out to him and see if we can get some synergy, get some deals going. So great job. Thank you, Scott. For those also looking back at the agenda, you'll see some topics we have in development. As Michael referenced in the beginning of the call, if you have a topic, please let us know. You can either present, co-present, or we'll find somebody to develop the topic. You can have a hand in it. Don't necessarily need to present if you don't want to. And then there's some links at the bottom. I want to thank everybody for those. All right. With that, we'll end the call. Thank you, everybody. Have a great month.